Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Emerging Enterprise Radio, featuring high growth companies and their trusted advisors.
Welcome to another episode of Emerging Enterprises. I'm your producer, Kevin Finn, and as usual, I have Van Baird in the studio with me, and Taylor Sear actually decided to join us.
Yeah.
We were important enough for her to come in today.
I decided, you know, I woke up and I was like, I'm going to go in today.
The show last week was not the same without you.
I believe it.
It really was not the same.
No, I'm just kidding.
I heard it was way better.
No.
I'm joking with you.
Not at all. Why are we in a studio? It is ridiculous outside. We need to be broadcasting live from this patio.
Finally, it's finally warm outside.
I didn't know that was available.
Do stuff.
No,
we're allowed to do it outside.
Radio remotes.
Yeah, we can do radio remotes. We can do it outside. Let's do it on the roof. We should go to my loft and do it from the roof.
I have a loft.
Yeah, we got a roof.
What?
Yeah.
Totally
so that's where we broadcast live. But I did hear it might snow tomorrow. So
it is Atlanta. We are in Atlanta.
Stop.
Well, for all the dozens of listeners that are tuning in right now, you can't see it, but Taylor and I are pretty excited for these guests that we have on this week. Because we've been trying for a month and a half to get them on the show. They keep pushing us off and pushing us off.
They're just too good for us.
Not true.
And then finally,
I've actually never heard of radio. I didn't know.
What is this radio?
Stop it.
We needed 2 months to prepare to hang out with Van for an hour. So
it is a build-up. But we're excited to have the gang, the partial gang from Root Radius in the studio, Josh Webb and Brian Noel. And there is a plethora of other swell people back at the Root Radius office in Kennistone.
Yes.
As well, that I'm sure they're tuning in. They're going to be listening and tweeting like crazy.
Yes.
While we're on the air. So welcome to the studio, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah. First time, huh?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. First time I've ever done this before, ever.
All right.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
I love this.
Well, the reason we're excited is that we're clients of Root Radius. Our website would not be what it is without Root Radius. The way we communicate what we do and how we do it would not be there if it weren't for Root Radius equipping us to tell our story. And so we had the pleasure of spending way too much time in their offices over 2 days, whiteboarding our complete lives out for business, and walked away with such a complete story to tell as far as the web, as far as when we're out and about, when we're talking to people online. So excited to have you guys here to tell us more about.
Thanks. It was a long time, but I think it was some kind of record. Like, I think we produced everything in like a
2 days.
And a half. Yeah. It was like a sweatshop in there. No, I'm kidding.
And I know better.
HR violation.
I know. Yeah. We were probably the last people you're ever going to do that with. We've ruined it for anybody else that could have taken advantage
of it. We really
did.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, I could go on and on, but this is y'all's baby. Josh, tell us a little bit about Root Radius. Just from your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it probably helps to know where a little bit of the intention of it comes from, because it's evolved over the years. But we've actually started 4 years a couple of agencies in town, you know, working on large accounts like Under Armour and Universal Studios and,
oh, wow,
and things like that. And primarily my job as a creative director for those agencies was to take business objectives from VPs that were trying to achieve things like, you know, whatever revenue increase, right, or whatever, and translate those into creative solutions, and then lead a team to do that. And for a while, you know, you get these analytics reports and that say, you know, that are supposed to say how well you're doing,
right,
as an agency, you,
right,
know, whether you're going to get hired or fired next, you know,
which is all the VPs month have to go off of, or numbers.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you look at those, and we would have, you know, basically these parties where you get your analytics report in, and it says, you know, 10% revenue increase for this ticket,
right,
sale, or, you know, this shoe, or, yeah, you know, tickets for
that's how valuable
cruise line or whatever. Which is really great, and it's there's nothing wrong with that at all. But for some reason, for me, it really kind of felt more like a life report. And I would look at it as like, what am I doing with my life? 0.10% revenue increase for the shoe or whatever. And
right,
and so just for me personally, where I loved what I got to learn in how to think strategically.
Yeah.
What was missing was why we were doing it, and
yeah,
who we were doing it for.
That's
and
huge.
So I started really looking into, you know, humanitarian organizations and how much strategy they put in versus businesses. Mm-hmm. And really what I found was two things. I started interviewing a lot of different causes, you know, big causes and startups. And mm-hmm, the biggest thing that I noticed was, number one, when I asked them the simple question, what do you do? It took them 30 minutes to say something that I then at the end didn't understand. And I just they just simply couldn't explain to me what they did as an organization.
That's the worst. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean they weren't collecting a lot of money.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't mean they weren't getting donations.
Right.
Because they may have been.
They just didn't know what to do with the money.
they just swam in it like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
But no, it was really more. They just couldn't explain what they did. And then in the end, their way of being able to communicate the thing that they didn't know how to communicate was typically, if it was a small organization, it was like hire your cousin. If it was a large organization, it's we're going to spend a lot of money, but we're not going to spend time really figuring out what gets people motivated. We're not going to spend time. We're just going to send out a bunch of mailers to as predictable income as we can. And it just happened like that over and over again. And so we really started seeing this idea that's like, well, they don't know how to tell their story, and they don't even necessarily know what it is or how to behave like they're telling an intentional one.
Right.
So that's that. You know, fast forward, you know, 2, 3, 4 years later, and now we're Radius. We equip causes to tell their story. And even more recently, what we figured out is not every story, once you like even know your story,
right,
some of it is kind of aspirational. Mm-hmm. And some of it is, you know, things that you're actually doing that are currently happening, and the other parts are vision and dreams that you hope will have, and that's what you tell everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that you can actually create an organization that says what you want your story to be is actually something that's become really interesting to us. And so now we're realizing it's not just enough. It's not enough to just tell a story. It's really about telling a story and making it true. Mm. And so that's where we lean now. And so we're an agency that helps strengthen organizations' stories and help them get the infrastructure needed to make it true.
What do you mean by make it true?
Yeah. So I mean, when you're an organization that is actually you know, trying to tell everybody exactly what it is you do, or you have like some specific purpose, it's going to get a kind of muddy, right? Mm-hmm. And you're trying to compel people to do something. Especially think about when you're a startup, right? It's like the only thing you have. You're, you know, you heard the term like "fake it till you make it." It's like completely. No, we're
not, I live by
we're
that.
Not familiar with that at all? No, sorry, idea what you're talking about.
So it's completely true, right? And you can't really fault people for that, because that's all you got, right? You got right. your dreams right. and you got hard work, and that's all you really got. But what's interesting is the idea of going in, figuring out what all the loose ideas are in your head, right? Mm. And turning those into an intentional story. So when you're telling everybody, you know exactly what you're going to tell them, you know exactly what you want them to leave the conversation with. And then what's worse is that they may actually like pay attention and see if what you said is that what you actually are.
Right.
And you don't want them to go in that back room and see you on the card
crap.
Table.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh no.
Don't look behind the curtain.
Don't look
right,
behind the curtain.
Right.
It's like, you know, I'm you know, you want to look like the Wizard of Oz. And so the biggest problem there is really trying to figure out a couple things, which is how do you come across as a true organization? And what it really comes down to is really, we think, three things, which is clarity, number one, being able to translate your loose ideas into a compelling story. Mm-hmm. And then credibility is like, what does it take for people to think that you're real and what you do can actually be accomplished? Mm-hmm. Is the story you're telling me, is that something you can actually pull off? Is it something that I should believe in? Mm-hmm. What makes somebody credible, and right. how do you build something specifically to be credible? And then it all comes down to sustainability in the end. You know, if you can't fund it, it's just going to slowly go away. So are the dreams, even if you are an actual credible person and you have a good story to tell, have you figured out a way to really get it funded? Have you figured out a way to create an organization and even a staff or a group of people that will sustain it beyond you?
Wow.
So those three things, we think that's make it true to us.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, I know we try to push as much as we can prior to the show about what this is going to be about, and we use the hashtag nonprofits. And there's got to be, if there's anybody in a nonprofit role listening right now, they're scribbling furiously, because those three words, the clarity, the credibility, the sustainability, that conversation does not happen on the front end when they're making their organization, creating their organization. So really three interesting subjects. Brian, how do those work together for you guys at Root Radius?
Yeah, one of the biggest thing that we've learned is there's this, we call it the donor gap, right? And it's the expectations that donors have versus the nonprofit leaders and what they're trying to execute, right? So you have, you know, when an investor invests into a nonprofit, they want a return on impact. Just like when you invest into a business, you want a financial return. When you're a donor investing into a nonprofit organization, you expect some type of return on that impact.
Yeah, you want to see how what your money's doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's that expectation that's set from the donors on, you know, exactly what are you providing? And I want to make sure that the money that I give you is being handled correctly. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure there's a return on that investment.
Right.
So over the past couple of years, we've seen this path that nonprofits, as we take them through, the main thing is in helping them really identify and overcome that donor's gap is these three: clarity, credibility, and sustainability. Mm. And with clarity, you know, we've really found that the anchor of any brand is a clear and compelling story that produces a call to action.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah, please.
A clear and compelling story that produces a call to action. Mm. That's clarity. And you know, we've this term, some people like it, some people don't, but we've coined it passion vomit, right?
Yeah, I love that.
So, you know,
hashtag passion vomit.
Yes, we use that.
Retweet.
Yeah, we got it.
and Josh can totally attest to this when he first started Root Radius. But when you go to someone and you have all this passion and fear and excitement, you know, sometimes people pat you on the back and say good luck. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because there's not clarity in exactly what you're trying to provide, mm-hmm. what problem you're trying to solve.
Right.
And like many of us, we're so solution-minded. In that story, you go so far into the solution, you forgot what problem you're even going after.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody the other day, just real quick, that it's funny that they were explaining to me, they were essentially going through their passion vomit, and they said, I feel like an insane person. And I was trying, and the thing was, they're a good communicator, and they're people that other people respect, that they'll accomplish things.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I was telling her, it's like, you are an insane person. You're leaving everything safe. You're creating all these different kinds of things. You just have to figure out how to take all the insanity and at least look like you know what you're talking about.
You jumped off the cliff and then decided to build the airplane. Yeah, you're crazy.
Wow. So with that clarity, that really presents to everyone who wants to be involved with that nonprofit what the nonprofit is for, what the organization is for. Because we work specifically with humanitarian nonprofits, social entrepreneurs, and religious organizations. So anyone, and we coin those as life-changing organizations, right?
Yeah.
So anyone who's changing lives. Once you have that clarity and you build that clarity, how do we move into credibility? Mm. That's a very important piece. Now, obviously, if you clearly communicate what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish, credibility comes in when you can back that up.
Right.
You have to put systems and processes in place to identify what you're trying to accomplish, how you're going to track that, and then how you're going to present that to those who are part of your organization.
So how do you do that as a new company when you don't have the results yet?
Well, we've identified, you know, what's really fun about...
I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
what's
too.
Great about credibility is credibility comes in so many different ways, right? Think about just you as a person. Right. Who you hang out with makes you credible or not credible.
Right.
Right. When you walk into the room, your presence, the way you dress, the way you act, the way you smell, right? All of that has to
you
do...
You look way better standing next to me than anybody else.
Absolutely. So what's great about credibility is for those who are starting causes, you know, it's like, man, I don't have anything. Well, the reality is, if you have that passion, if you've developed that story, if you start connecting with people who are experts in the space, you're building credibility.
Right.
So, you know, 20 years of experience obviously is credible.
Sure.
But there's so many ingredients that add to that credibility.
Yeah, the way we look at it is that, you know, if you even look up what the definition of credibility is, it's really just that someone believes you. Mm. It's the belief in something.
Okay.
You know, so when somebody says you're credible, essentially they're saying the thing that you say you do, I believe you can do that.
Right.
You know, so we really look at it, it's almost like ingredients, or think about like a courtroom, almost like evidence. If you're trying to get like the jury to believe something, I'm going to present some evidence to you, and where I can't prove it to you, you're essentially going to say, okay, we think this is a credible witness. We think this is a credible, mm-hmm. you know, a credible piece of evidence that's going to make me believe this one thing, and then we're going to go with it. And that's going to be, do I believe you can actually feed all these people you say you're going to feed? Do I believe you can actually, you know, end homelessness? Do I actually think you can do these kinds of things? And mm-hmm. and so where you don't have to prove that we will,
right.
I at least have to believe that you're going to, enough for me to give you money or support you.
Yeah, because you guys are taking people and not you know, walking them off the, or talking them off the cliff, but you're giving them that clarity piece because I know so many people start with that passion vomit where I'm going to save everyone in the world that's mm-hmm. having this issue, and you guys are quick to say, no, you're not, right? I mean, how do you have those conversations when it's to get people down to what are you at the core? Because it's too broad of a statement to say we're going to feed everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. It kind of depends on where you are, because some people are like, you know, I just don't even know I can do it. Those people, you just want to pat them back. He's like, you're going to save the world.
Yeah.
Other people are like, you know, we are saving the world. I'm like, no, you're not. You're in Cincinnati.
Yeah, exactly.
just start with Cincinnati.
gotcha. Changing the world.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So it's you know, and then of course moving into sustainability. So you've got clarity, clear message, and then you're presenting ways to show everyone who's involved to build on that donor base, to build on that advocate base and volunteer base, the credibility in what you're trying to provide. Mm-hmm. And then that moves into the sustainability piece. I mean, right. One thing that we say at Root Radius is if everyone who set out to change the world was successful, how different would the world be? Mm-hmm. And we're just very passionate about all. I mean, there's so many people entering into the space who have great intentions, who have really incredible solutions to problems. But what happens is, and this is where we love to come alongside them and help, is all of a sudden to save the world, you start an organization. And you have to become a manager and a recruiter and a social expert and a content expert and a digital expert and accounting and entity expert. And you have to become all these things. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate that their original goal just becomes squandered because they tried to build this organization and they tried to be 100 different things. Mm-hmm. And so as we come along them and build those pieces, that moves into the sustainability piece. How can we focus and work on building credibility, clarity, credibility, and sustainability so they can focus on what they set out to do, and that's change lives.
Yeah. Wow. And for you guys to exist for so many organizations that are struggling there, and to be at this now 4 years, and you know, you've changed a little bit over time.
Yes.
From what you, and you kind of have to, mm-hmm. right? Just because we don't know what we want to be when we grow up as an organization for the most part. And so you have these things that move in and out and affect the way you think. So what have you guys learned? Yeah, you know, what's changed? What are you doing differently now than 4 years ago, as far as, you know, personally, professionally, just in working with these organizations?
You know, I think for me, as I guess technically a founder, and I still kind of laugh at that word sometimes because, you know, I founded something, yeah. Like, you know, like Plymouth Rock,
right?
But it's for me, what I realized is that there was a specific vision that I had, mm-hmm. that where certain things have stayed really concrete, and I would say more than values, like the overall vision has kind of stayed really clear. What I realized was that on my own, I was really only as good as my particular skill set. Right.
Right.
And matter of fact,
so true. Yeah. Sorry, but go ahead. Continue.
She's like, look at it.
No, I'm looking at it. All right, guilty. I did.
Yeah. But the thing is, and it's more than just teamwork. What I really realized over time is that applies to the vision as well. Because a lot of times what visionaries have, or I call it founder's disease, essentially, mm-hmm. what I've kind of started calling it. And it's basically the idea that it's at a certain point, it's like, you know, I am the owner of the vision, and no one else can have it. Everybody else can execute it, but I'm the owner of the vision. And what I realize is that it's not true, because I still am all over the place sometimes in my head, and I'm still trying to flesh out what it is. It's like picking, you know, things out of the air.
Oh, we were in a meeting last night where people said, hey, what's relational equity all about? And I put it on a whiteboard, and then Taylor came in and said, what's relational equity all about? She put it on the whiteboard. Hers was so much better than mine.
Yeah,
so
much. Very different.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a learning standpoint, I've just learned to give it away.
Yeah.
I've realized that when the vision is owned by the people that are doing it, mm-hmm. it goes way beyond what you actually ever thought it could actually be. It's better. It's hard to give it up because you don't know if they're going to succeed, and you don't know if theirs will be as good as yours or if they'll protect it as well as you did.
Sure.
But what you find is if you put the right people in the room, they do, and it actually, you know,
is that
it's like a little community garden.
Is that now, how with the size of the organizations you guys are working with? Are we talking less than 10 people? Because I would think as those organizations grow, it gets harder and harder for that vision to stay true.
Yeah, I'd say in helping nonprofits and cause organizations with the story piece, some of the things we've learned is when they're just starting out, they're trying to establish that story. Mm-hmm. But the bigger they get, we found that they've lost their story. And I, you know, you read books about it all the time, and even us. I mean, we started with, I mean, Josh started the company, and then I joined, and now we're 9 employees now. So even we're going through that, and how do we continue to live out the why and really clearly present to everyone, even me, even back to Josh, how do we clearly present the why? And it's just something that we have to ask ourselves that every day. And so when we work with some of the larger organizations, it's definitely a difficulty. You've got, you know, this program has ownership of this one thing, and they say, well, that's you know, I can't touch that because that's that department, and you just have all that stuff, and you have to work through that. But, you know, unfortunately, what that prohibits is the ability for an organization to have a unified front in their story. And that's when you have just an incredible response from everyone outside the walls of the organization, is when you have that unified front, when everyone's championed that message. That's when you get some incredible, incredible results in advocacy.
Well, and I think I've seen personally that result come just from knowing you and the people that you've connected with, and you haven't gotten inside the walls of Root Radius and said it's just all about us. Mm-hmm. You've really learned from some other people that have gone before you. Talk a little bit about the relationships you've got with other COOs, with people that have done this before, and how you're learning from them.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the biggest lessons we learned. I mean, I know for me personally, like, it's just when you start something, you know, there's so much excitement and ownership. You get in a room and like 3 years later you come out, you know, and it's unfortunate. Yeah. And,
oh my goodness.
And nonprofits.
He's laughing. It's serious.
It's so true.
It's so true.
And especially when people start causes, they to save the world, they go into a closet.
Yeah.
I mean, they isolate themselves and they don't validate. They don't go out and talk to other people. They see other organizations as competition all of a sudden, and literally saving the world, they shut themselves in a closet. And we did the same thing. We had a little office in Ackworth right next to the railroad tracks, and
nice.
we literally had to pause every 20 minutes on meetings when the train came by.
You guys in a railroad?
Yes, that was a client actually asked us that. But that was the biggest lesson for us. So after a couple of years of just, you know, Josh and I battling it out, you know, just trying to figure it out, we said, you know, let's go hire some coaches. And what's funny is I remember Josh was like, man, I just want a mentor. And what we learned is that you have to pay for a coach.
Yeah.
They're not just going to fall out. Now, we do have some people that has stayed with us, and even some early relationships Josh had that he brought into the culture that have been with us, and they've taught us so much. And it's always incredible and reassuring when you sit down with someone and just talk through what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
So I'd say specifically, I know I've had a CFO coach come out and help me specifically. Mm-hmm. Any chance I get to talk to someone in that operations financial role, I love it. I eat it up. Any chance I can get, as well as if I'm hanging out with someone in a business, I'm always asking questions like, you know, how many employees do you have? Where are they based out of? What does that structure look like? You know, what does the hierarchy look like? Because I'm just constantly trying to figure out how they're set up and how they operate and those types of things. And I love those conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say the biggest thing there is that where we have a lot of different relationships that have come and gone, you know, Terry Barber from Jamsters has been a really important part to, I mean, I think I even told him about the original idea. He's one of the first people to hear it. And he's been really helpful over the years. But I think the ability to be able to get advice from whatever consultant or just advisor you have and actually put it into practice is the one thing that I think that if I would, you know, say we did one thing right, it's that we heard something and we said, let's go implement it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And even if it didn't fully get done, or even if we didn't do it as good as we could have done, we actually paid attention and did it. And we can look back and go, I'm really glad we did that particular thing. I'm really glad we changed the way we did our billing. I'm really glad we changed, you know, we got that HR consultant in and we went ahead and did put together an entire HR plan when we're only 9 people. I mean, people don't do that kind of thing because they're not, you know, because people tell them to, and they go, yeah, I'm only 2 people or whatever. And then after a while you start going, let's backtrack and fix all those things we didn't pay attention to.
Right.
So yeah, I mean that, I think for us, it's a bunch of relationships, finally getting out of the office and stop, you know, just arguing with each other and testing ideas against other people and then putting things into practice.
So it's not just all your vision, Josh? I mean, do people not just follow your vision?
Did you see him? He's like, oh, no.
The people closest to me, I'm such a mess. The people closest to me, I mean, they know it's like, it's for me, it's constantly, the reason I have such apathy for the people that come into our office is because, you know, I'm like Hair Club for Men. It's like, I'm also, I think it's something that, you know, something like passion vomit or the lack of clarity. I think it's truly anything you're doing that's really important.
Right.
If you don't go through that phase, I don't think it's important enough or it's too simple. You know what I mean? You have to, there's this bit of things where it's so intangible and you have so much passion around it and it's floating all over the place and it's driving you nuts and you're going crazy and people look at you, you know, like you should be in the crazy house or whatever.
Sure.
But in the end, I think you have to go through that. And then when you finally come out and there's clarity, all of a sudden everybody thinks it's like, wow, what a genius. And it's like, well, I was trying to tell you what it was. And then you got the next thing you don't want to tell them about because you look stupid again. So,
well, having gone through that process, that shows up. And I think there's a certain energy that comes from working with somebody who's gone through that, has been in the trenches, has given their blood, sweat, and tears to a project already. And now that y'all have done that enough with other organizations, how do you sustain that excitability? Because everybody that walks in that big whiteboard and sits down on that couch has to go through the ringer with you guys. I mean, where do you guys go from here?
I think one of the one thing that's been great, even me coming, a couple of months after Josh started the company, one of the things that I love and value and respect his leadership in is it's champion the why, right? Mm-hmm. Champion the why, but don't put pride around the strategies it takes to execute the why. And we've kind of call ourselves habitual tweakers, but we're just constantly tweaking and everything we learn applying. But likewise for the organizations that come in, it's really encouraging them and mm-hmm. having so much respect for them, and really encouraging them to identify that why. And when you see someone who has so much passion, and for the first time, even in their minds, they can say it clearly. It's a good experience. I mean, it's an incredible experience.
I just got chills.
Because seriously, you think, I mean, their life's so mission, yeah. mm-hmm. like literally what they feel like everything that happened to them
yeah.
to that point has identified them to do this one thing. And in that moment, they can say it clearly. It's incredible.
Yeah, and it's funny because they'll have people that they know have been sitting there with money waiting right. to potentially give them, who won't give them any money. And then they'll go back and tell them it this way again. And all of a sudden they release the check. It's like, and what they'll hear from them is, I was just waiting for you to know exactly what you were doing.
Yeah.
Wow.
That makes
so
much
cool.
So
where are the people for us? Do we have those people? Oh. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off the air.
Yeah.
So listeners, if you'd like to make a donation to Racial Equity.
That's www.
Taylor's
so I know the
com.
Answer to this, no, but I want y'all to share. What's that process like? How do you bring that clarity piece? How do you bring the credibility and how do you bring the sustainability? Can you walk the listeners through that process?
There's really a couple ways. I mean, from an offering standpoint, we offer we're putting together a curriculum to be able to have people go through it with us that can't actually afford to hire us personally to come in and do it, and that's something that we're launching hopefully in the next few months. That's going to take all the way through this, and it's going to be something that's really good and high quality. The other part is coaching. So we've sort of phased in from a coaching standpoint to where now we start to go from a long-term standpoint where, people are hiring us every month to talk to them online. Mm-hmm. And we're going through our entire process of figuring out what the problem is, and exactly how their solution is solving it, what offerings they have,
right.
their entire marketing plan, all things like that. And then the primary thing that we've been doing whenever we're working with us personally is that we have strategy sessions that we get hired for. So, people will come into our office and they're essentially where we set it up like an experience that you have. You come yeah. in and we let our staff serve you. And a lot of times it ends up being almost a venting session. Somebody said
come
it
on,
was
that's yeah. Madison.
Somebody said it was.
You make it
was,
sound like Brian and Bliss and all
right,
that.
Right,
no,
right.
No, it's Madison.
Madison, if you can hear us, thank you. For this, I heard something the other day said it really kind of felt like a cause therapy. Is what
they're
about
for sure.
Because they're essentially putting it all out there, and we're just capturing and facilitating all the information that's been floating out and then starting to help them make sense of it. Right. And by the end of the day, they have either a full story, they may have a full digital plan, they may have an entire donor experience plan. And so, where that doesn't always happen in a day, for a lot of our smaller causes, we work through it in a really small about period. And then for the larger causes, it may take months, right. But that's one of the main things. And then obviously, probably the biggest thing that we spend a lot of our time in is that we don't just help you figure out what it is. We also help you tell the story. So, right. We have creative execution. We have developers and mm-hmm. designers and writers and people like that that we help figure out, okay, now that we have the story, how exactly are we going to tell it
right.
and how are we going to produce all this stuff? And it helps that we helped come up with a strategy and we're actually producing the execution of it mm-hmm. because then we're like, uh-oh, we all guessed this and we were wrong. We can pivot real quick
sure.
or we know the source behind what it is. So the goal is to not just to say, here's a bunch of principles, good luck. The goal is that we really want to be beside the causes. It's one of the reasons that we did this is mm-hmm. we actually wanted to be doing the work. It's just that, I shouldn't be running a soup kitchen. My soup sucks. You know, we know how to communicate. We know how to translate ideas.
Hashtag that way.
Yeah. MySoupSucks.com. But it's really that case. It's taking all of these people. I mean, our staff is essentially made up of a bunch of passionate professionals. Yes. That are all like me, like they all wanted to make a difference with the stuff that they had learned how to do. Mm-hmm. And now through the causes that we get to work with, we're allowed to change lives by helping them.
Yeah. And you're doing that in a lot of different ways, but moving forward, what specific offerings do you guys have coming out? That's going to continue helping people along those lines.
I'll share a little bit about, it's funny. 4 years, right? We've been doing this for 4 years. And kind of the theme that I've learned and seen from other people is year one, you do whatever you can because you want to feed the family, right? Year two, you're like, holy crap, how are we going to do all this? Year three, it's like, maybe we should do what we're good at, right? And so now we feel like, now again, we're habitual tweakers, so we'll see what it looks like in a couple of years. But we feel like we've really identified, we validated the audience and identified what they need and we're positioning ourselves to really provide services and products to provide that.
Right.
Some of the biggest things, it's funny, when you first show up, right, it's, and it's creative meetings and everyone's brainstorming. And it's like, yeah, we should do a neon blimp and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that's really cool. How much does that cost? I don't know.
Tony Morgan's Big Blue Monkey. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And you're sitting with a nonprofit and they're like, oh, that'd be really fun. How much does that cost? I don't know, $250,000. They're like, I have $500.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, and
you get a small blimp.
Yeah. You can get one of the small, yeah.
A little chachi.
But and then asking them, how has your week been? They'll tell you, well, my email server was broken. I've been working on my emails all day. And we're sitting here. You set out to change the world, and you spent 2 days trying to fix your email server. Mm-hmm. So what we've learned and really tried to position ourselves to is, again, back to that clarity, credibility, and sustainability. How do we help them put that infrastructure in place,
right,
so they can focus on what they're called to do? And that boils down to very, very simply, like providing branding. Yeah. So we provide branding. We provide some different website options because, websites can be inexpensive. They can be really expensive. Yeah. You can hire one person and hope it gets done, or you can hire, so there's a broad spectrum. So moving forward, really, once we help them through the curriculum and the coaching and the strategy piece, how do we provide those specific offerings? And that's what we've tried to do. From branding to content strategy and content support, helping them managing their content, find new ways to use their content, helping them identify from a digital standpoint. Another big lesson that we've learned is if nonprofits have $25,000 budget, they'll spend $24,500 on their website. And we're just like, you should spend like 20% of your overall marketing budget on your website and the rest of it on content and execution and things like that.
As long as your marketing budget's not $10,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really just as we work with nonprofits, based on where they're at, giving them very specific, very tangible, once that strategy set, products that can work. And another piece is, we've been able to, because of the skill sets, obviously, Josh's background, user experience, and because of those skill sets and then skill sets we brought to the team as we want to grow, we've been able to work with a nonprofit that's just starting out, brand new, all the way up to we've been able to work with American Cancer Society, United Way, and things like that. So we're really trying to be careful with this business model. So any entrepreneurs out there, I'll talk to you for a second. With this, the agency business model, the tendency is just the bigger account, right? And you end up, several zeros behind your original revenue stream later, just chasing the next big account. And it becomes just kind of this vicious cycle of, you got to pay the bills. We got to land the account. We have the account. We got to hire the people to be able to accommodate the account. Oh, the account's not there anymore. We got to fire people. And when Josh and I said, we have the advantage to build whatever we want. So what are we going to build? And we definitely did not want to build that.
Right.
So looking out, trying to accommodate small to medium nonprofits with curriculum and coaching. And then as those nonprofits, we help them build the infrastructure where they can invest in more infrastructure to go out and reach more fans, more funds, and obviously make more change.
Yeah. And I hope, as you guys talk, I don't want to have the listeners get lost on what I already know about everything you're saying and the way y'all execute and the way you connect with the people you bring into your office. It really is phenomenal, and I can't urge people enough that whether you're an existing, whether you're starting, to come in, have a conversation with you guys, because you'll talk to anybody initially, right? Just how can we help? And but how do people find you? How do they connect with you to get started?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously you can go to our website, rootradius.com. There's still a resource up right now that that before the curriculum come out, it's still available. And you can go to passionvomit.com to download an ebook.
Okay.
That helps through some of these things. I would say, if you go to our website and fill out a form there, or even reach out to us at Root Radius. We're on Instagram at Root Radius. We're on anything we can be, obviously. but you're going to get contacted by Joe Garcia, is our director of client experience, and he loves that title because he gets to talk about what it means and about relationships and things like that. Or you're going to hear from Madison, and then eventually you're gonna run into us, and then we're going to talk too much. I think the biggest thing is, like, we want to hear about the people that are changing lives, throughout Atlanta, throughout the whole world, really. But we want to hear their ideas. We want to hear how they've been going. I want to hear their struggles. And ultimately, we want to know how we can help them. So,
well, to each of you individually, you can answer this question. So, because you're going to have your own story, but I'm not trying to make you pick your favorite kid, but what's been the most gratifying project that you've worked on so far? Well, you just like, God, this story, these people, this cause, to be able to take them from A to B, to be a part of that. Is there one in particular that stands out?
I don't think I'll say the name of some of them, but I think for me, what I love personally is when we first entered the room, it was all about websites and creative and print pieces and videos and all that kind of stuff. But naturally what happened is we started getting asked, we would help nonprofits. Like one of the projects we were on, we actually had two nonprofits work together to do a joint campaign to have a greater impact. And I think Josh went out there to help navigate that relationship and teamed up those nonprofits.
So y'all brokered that.
Yeah. I think when
it's happened a couple of times where we've gone in to just, advise on marketing and, end up bringing two nonprofits together. That's actually happened a couple times.
So the organizational strategy side of things, when the reason one of the main reasons we didn't want to go after the next account, the next big account, because the bigger the account, the more specific, you're coming in to execute one very specific thing among a very specific project. Mm-hmm. But when we're working with these medium-sized nonprofits and we're working with the leaders, the directors, and the founders, they ask us questions like, how can we build this program? Mm-hmm. How can we execute it? How can we make it stronger? So we start entering into the conversation of helping them really understand the way to position their organization to better communicate it.
Yeah.
And for me personally, since obviously I'm an operations person, that's what brings me so much joy to be even to be able to contribute to that. Sure. Is such an honor.
Sure.
I'll probably answer the same way as to not choose a child. But
Choose a child.
Okay. Well, it'll be my firstborn, my heir. I think for me, it has a lot to do with transformation. So, obviously, I love working with startups. I also really think it's a really cool experience to work with large nonprofits that you can make a tremendous impact through. But you're going to be a cog in a wheel.
Yeah.
That's a big machine running. So, my favorite is working with what I call like adolescent nonprofits. They've been around for about 10 years, maybe a little bit longer. They've been helping people for a while.
Right.
But it's some of these lost stories that we tell you about, it's one thing when you're finding your story, but you still have that momentum behind you. There's still something that you're passionate and you're going to accomplish it and all that kind of stuff. With lost stories, that's when you meet, being in a nonprofit, the one thing I've really learned is the more I interact with these people is that they're low paid a lot of times. They're not appreciated a lot of times. And yet they're the ones that are actually interacting with the people in need. And so they're just tired and they've lost their story. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they just, yeah, and definitely. It's like, it's, you know, it's like losing, you know, losing your heart some, in some cases. And so you talk to them and it's like, yeah, and sometimes they're grumpy and sometimes, you know, and you look into why and you're like, you know what? I'd be grumpy too.
Yeah. It's and like having a kid. They hit teenage years and you're like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
I'm just tired.
Out of my house.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is a lot like that. And so some of my favorite clients that we've worked with have been people that have been doing it for a long time that are sort of like, this is my last ditch effort. Not before we quit, but before I just say, well, this is it.
Yeah.
And we figure out, we kind of reestablish what the purpose was. And then, you know, with what happens with a lot of those organizations is maybe the founder gets it,
yeah,
and they go back and then all the staff rolls their eyes at them and go, here we go again.
Here's, yeah, that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
Giving us another logo.
Yeah.
And what we figured out is like, no, okay, we've told a story. Now how do you integrate that into the culture and how do we get it to where everybody else owns it? And we go really deep. And with ones that we've seen, we've probably had, you know, about five really good success stories of people that when they're done, you know, we'll be at the party for, you know, for the entire organization. And you'll see people that are like counselors saying, knowing what the story is and telling everybody about it.
Yeah.
And you'll basically see life in the organization again. And when I see that, that's when, you know, it's something when we go back to the idea of making it true.
Yeah.
I feel like there's these moments,
yeah,
and you've probably hit them every once in a while where you can go, cool, I've been telling people this for a while, but I finally just saw evidence that what I'm doing is actually true.
Yeah.
And that's when we've seen that transformation. That's what it is. It's like, I was like, oh, everything we've been trying to do for the last 4 years actually is a true thing.
Sure.
We actually are equipping right, as a teller story.
That's a good feeling, by the way.
Good validation.
Yeah. I'm a crier. I get little tears. You know, everybody makes fun of me, but it's like, but you know, that's those moments.
He's serious.
I'm right there with you, man. Yeah. I cried when old Yeller died. I did. I mean, it's just the way I am.
It helps wash the crumbs out of your beard, though. Yeah. Evolution,
and that's needed.
So, my tears wipe the crumbs.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to get like all sappy or anything, but that's essentially. I mean, you do this stuff for meaning.
Yeah.
You don't do this stuff. It's like, hey, you know a great way to make money? Work with nonprofits.
Right.
said no one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's about meaning. And so when you see that and you see these people change and you see these people that it's a different kind of audience because you're used to working with, you know, the actual homeless person or the actual – you just don't think about the person leading that cause very often. Mm-hmm. And when you see them re-inspired and you see them, it's like – and they're doing a better job because of it. Yeah. That's what does it for me.
Yeah, I was having breakfast with a guy in Orlando, and he actually it's pretty interesting. I didn't know this, but he said several cities, when people are released from prison, put them on a bus and pay for them to go to Orlando. Major homeless population, and he lives with them, like for years. He said he's had over 20,000 hours. I don't know.
They accept them.
They accept them.
I was going to say Disney. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Disney changed.
It's a really magical place. I don't know if you heard.
I mean, that's what I think of.
But it was really interesting. In this, he's served them for years. He said the people have died in his lap, cried in his lap. He works
with
moms and sons and daughters and brothers and sisters. And he said, you know, it's so funny that so many people, their main objective is to provide them a home. But he said what's interesting is, you know, several people in the world do not have a structure like we would expect.
Right, right, right.
In fact, a far low percentage does, right?
Yeah, we live in a country where our cars have houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he said my ultimate goal is that I want to live with them and show them compassion before something tragic happens in their life. More tragic than it already has, right?
You know, what he needs is a website.
Yeah.
You would.
But what's so funny is I'm sitting here, never met this guy before. He's sitting here talking about this. He just starts tearing up. Public place, breakfast,
right?
And I'm sitting across the table, and I'm like, you know, I mean, passion's not dead,
right?
And is for us who are constantly, you know, in the office space and white collar, and we're interacting. It's so incredible to sit with someone and just listen as they talk about being with those people in the need. I mean, we talk about it. We talk about it in our faith, in our churches. We talk about, you know, all these people that have all these needs. But at the end of the day, there's only few people that are actually out there interacting with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And when we get to empower them, it's incredible.
That is so cool. Mm. Yeah. And it does seem that Atlanta is you mentioned social entrepreneurs, that it's just kind of an incubator. There's a bunch of companies in and around Atlanta, and I am going to put both of you guys on the spot with this because we didn't talk about this ahead of time. But to we're always looking for people to come on the show and talk about how are they impacting this city. And I know that's why we wanted you guys on here. You're making a difference. What are some other really cool companies that are doing some cool things in Atlanta that we need to bring in here and give them a platform to talk about? And there's a dead silence.
B-Remedy.
You've probably, I mean, yeah, B-Remedy is definitely one of them. He's probably been brought up a lot. I love ATL is, I don't know if
we
you guys...
We need to get them on.
Yeah, yeah.
That would so be great.
There's a couple guys that, some of them I've worked with in the past, and then I think there's one of the founders that I haven't, but it's an Instagram group that is essentially, I mean, they even posted something now, like they're basically putting themes up where it's like they want you to take 90 photos of what homelessness looks like in Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
So wow. what they're doing is they're really kind of spreading, they're changing the look of Atlanta. I think they were kind of tired of the branded Atlanta, and they're like, right. No, let's capture the real thing. And then they're putting them up as, and they're actually putting them up as a gallery, and then, you can sell it, and they put that all to the, to the Atlanta food bank. But yeah, I think they're one, Hive, I think you guys already had on, we talk a lot of the symptoms we're talking about is lonely leader symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of some others. Oh, I'm being polite and moving out of the mic, but
it might come to mind.
Yeah, it's hard. I'd have to think about it.
Okay. There's just so many.
Yeah.
There are.
And I mean, I know this is not answering your question, and this is one of those not answers, but I'm gonna say it anyway.
You're good at that.
Yeah.
Politician
CFOs.
Right there.
Yeah.
But it's there's so many local nonprofits who are doing incredible, very local work. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of times we champion those that are in the spotlight, but at the end of the day, you've got some very sweet, 65-year-old lady who's been serving the homeless for, 40 years.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge, even in Atlanta, and we've worked with tons and tons and tons of nonprofits, and they're all over the country, but obviously we love working with organizations in Atlanta, but there's an incredible amount of, and so really my challenge is... Walk down the road, find a nonprofit, and love them. Love them, support them.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I know you brought up social entrepreneurs, and I just want to make a point here. Here's something that's really cool, is that it's trendy right now, and I understand why it's trendy. I think it's trendy because we're in a spot now where you can produce anything very quickly. You can go and prototype something.
Hmm.
You can come. It's actually the easiest time right now to be an entrepreneur that probably it ever has been.
Right.
But what's really interesting is that because of that you have all these people that are basically coming with social enterprise ways of helping people, which I think is really cool, and I think it's going to work for a lot of people. What's interesting though is the other side of it is you start going, well, let's talk about donations, and let's talk that they're just trying to get money. They're just like you start to look at donations like almost like this way that an organization is just trying to get money into their organization. But like Brian's saying, what's really interesting is that you have. These are people that like they're on the ground actually helping them. And so I think what's cool is that as we start to see like what I'm hoping is going to happen, I think we see a little bit of this too, is that you get these social enterprise, social entrepreneurs where what they're creating is hopefully they're not just creating a platform. What they're doing is they're creating ways to support these people that end up having to spend 65% of their time fundraising because they can't figure out how else to pay for the bread that feeds these people.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so that's why I love seeing things like, we love ATL, that kind of thing. It's like, it's trying to figure out how to support those.
And I'll push back a little bit on the trendiness. I think that's a generational thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, so a trend might be the wrong word, in my opinion, because I do see students coming out of college who realize, money's great, but I can make a difference. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be through a church. It doesn't have to be necessarily through a nonprofit, but I can form a company that realizes, with the resources we raise, we can do a lot of good. And I think that's more of a generational thing.
Well, it's us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's our story. Yeah. So I completely agree. I think the thing though is like starting to almost kind of say, well, the idea of these people that don't have a service that's marketable.
Mm.
They don't have, it's like feeding these people is not marketable. It just costs money.
Right.
It just costs time and effort. And so you start to have people that are just like, what I'm hoping is that the trend ends up being this really big, this really big conglomeration of essentially people trying to push to the things that are marketable and the things that actually do have, something you can sell or monetizable. And then, and then that ends up really supporting.
Yeah. If you're going to follow through on the business model, sure.
Yeah. It's like Brian's saying, you have these people that are, they're never going to be cool.
No, they're not on Twitter. They're not. Yeah.
No, they're just not going to be cool. Yeah. They spent time trying to help people, and I'm not saying anything against trying to be cool. It's like, you know, I try every day.
It's not their motivation.
But it's really interesting to try to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like if you're someone that can actually build a platform, if you're someone that can actually promote well, figure out how to promote them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what we're doing. That's why we use this platform, is to bring in companies like you guys. Thank you so much for coming in. One more time, everybody can find you guys at rootradius.com, and then you went across all the platforms with that same name. So on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, you're on there. We'll have all that up on our site after the show. But thanks, Brian. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man.
Coming
thanks
in.
For having us on.
Thank you.
All right, Kevin, you want to take us out?
Definitely. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Van Baird and Taylor Sear and our guests today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Emerging Enterprises.